Hello, friends. Grab your wine, grab your chair. You are listening to the Close Friends podcast. This is where we hit record on our IRL conversations as friends about surviving, diving, and thriving. What? I said that wrong. We're just going to carry on. Thriving headfirst into life as adults, but also trying to have a fucking good time. I am your host, Lucy, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chara.
Hello, friends.
And Sarah.
Hiya, pals.
Hiya, pals.
Hiya.
Close friend of the week. Who has it today?
It's me. It's me, mate. This one came accompanied with a photo, which we absolutely loved. So thank you to Moll, who sent us in this wonderful review. So it's a picture of her and her boyfriend listening to the pod in the car, with the caption, "Road tripping with my boyfriend and listening to Close Friends for hours equals the best kind of conversations. Had to keep pausing the pod so we could chat through our opinions." Oh, maybe some really fab revelations and fucking great sex. Yes. So Moll, We were all collectively just really happy to see you thriving off the back of our podcast. And we just wish you all the great sex in the world. So congrats.
Good for her.
Go, Moll. Okay, so today how is everyone? Just talk to me. Are we okay?
Yeah, how are you, Lucy?
I've got COVID. I have got COVID. But I'm through the worst of it. Last week, like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, was bleak. It's very bleak. But it's all in the background now. It's in the past. I woke up this morning and I felt amazing. I put on a bra today. I'm wearing a bra right now. So,
mate, congrats.
You could say I'm going really well.
Good.
Yeah, wow. I'm not either, actually.
Doing better than both of us. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
How's the packing, Saz?
I mean, obviously you had COVID and that's bad, but I'd say, like, it's harder being here trying to pack up, you know, your life, and I'm surrounded by my own shit and it's just making me really stressed. But apart from that, I haven't actually put anything in the suitcase yet. And for context, anyone who's new here, A, go back and listen to everything else that we've done because it's fucking brilliant. And B, to catch you up, I'm moving to America next week. As you listen to this, it will be a week to this moment. I'll probably be on a plane. Don't panic. Everything is fine. No, it's going to be all right. Found somewhere to live that's not a caravan, so I'm pretty buzzing about that. And yeah, I'm feeling all right, actually. I think it had potential to be fucking terrible and a lot of panic, but it is what it is and life's an adventure, so there you go.
Put that on a mug.
Tara, how is it being out in Ibiza?
I think my life is toughest, really, because it actually rained today for the first time in months. So
that must be so hard.
It's terrible. It's really horrible. No, I'm kidding. I'm having a
normalized normalized rain.
Normalized rain in Ibiza.
Normalized weather changes in Ibiza.
Oh no, life is good here, team. I must admit. By the time you are all listening to this, it will be my boyfriend Sam's birthday, which is super fun. So he's out here with me, and we've got a week of really fun stuff planned. So can't complain, really. Can't complain at all.
Sam. It's,
yeah, good old Sam. Anyway, so today's topic comes off the back of a summer of sport, really, which I love. I love having a summer of sport. It's the best thing ever, but it has been. I don't know whether it's just because I'm 5 years older at this point, but or whether it's just a sign of the times that there was a lot more drama in our summer of sport this time around than last time around. And we're going to be talking about sport generally, but we are going to highlight women in sport. We're going to highlight racism in sport. We're going to talk a bit about the Olympics and what happened, some of the controversy around what people have been wearing in their sporting categories and, stuff like that. So I think, Sarah, you wanted me to do a little bit of an overview of what's been happening, and I will definitely update everyone along the way. I mean, I've been sat literally glued to my television watching all of the sport Definitely for the last couple of weeks. I mean, I was moving calls around so that I could watch the gymnastics as it was happening because it was just so amazing. There's also lots of stuff that's happened around like mental health in sport. So a couple of things to highlight, a couple of people to highlight are Naomi Osaka and also Simone Biles. Then we also want to bring up the drug scandal that happened with Sha'Carri Richardson. So there's all sorts to discuss, and I'm trying to figure out where to start, really.
I think like Simone Biles was the one that was like the most heavily publicized, certainly from my perspective, which it's a really interesting situation as well, isn't it? In fact, Tara, do you want to recap what happened? I could probably do a pretty bad version of it.
So Simone Biles is undoubtedly the most incredible gymnast in the world. She does things that nobody else can do and is just absolutely incredible and has won multiple gold medals. But she turned up to the Olympics this year and pulled out after the all round. She did her vault and she came off the vault and her face was just, she just did not want to be there. And she ended up pulling out of most of the events. She came back for the beam in the end, but she pulled out because of her mental health. And she said that the pressure of being who she was and being, you know, America's treasure and also living up to her title was too much for her. And it sparked a really interesting conversation that I had with my mum about the pressure that these athletes feel and also the fact that there's not quite enough. I mean, there's much more now support on the mental health side. For background, if you didn't listen to the episode with my mum, she competed in tennis for GB in the 1984 Los Angeles Olympics. So she has been there, done that. And we're going to dial her in at some point during this episode, aren't we?
Yeah, this is like, so the interesting response to the Simone Biles situation was it really started to, like all good controversial topics, it really started to polarize the audience. And you had the sane half of the world who were like, yeah, fair, not just fair enough, not just that's understandable if you're an Olympic athlete who's won God knows how many medals and you're under that much pressure. And you're only like, how old is Simone Biles?
She's 24,
wow.
Just someone else to give me crippling, you know, what have you done with your life compared to me?
Stop
and you're younger
it.
Than me. But anyway, like not only is one half of the world being like, that's understandable, but most of that half of the world is also like, fair play to you for being so brave and so strong, for actually, you know, managing to have the strength to withdraw yourself from the situation. But the other half of the world are using things like the word snowflake. Like fucking Piers Morgan. Like, he always has something to say, doesn't he?
But it's hilarious because Piers Morgan is sat on his couch
serious?
Eating fucking, you know, crisps, talking about Simone Biles like he could be anything to do with an Olympic athlete ever in his life. Like I think it's fucking pathetic how these people think that they have a say, or they could even think that they might even be able to relate to an Olympic athlete in any possible way. Something interesting, I can't remember who I was talking to about this, but somebody said to me, or it might have been actually something that one of the athletes said in an interview, said that the pressure of maintaining your status, maintaining your gold medal is much higher than the pressure to get one in the first place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's that maintenance of like, I am the best, now I've got to keep myself there. And I can't, I mean, no one, none of us could even imagine that.
Well, it's a lifestyle as well. And I don't mean in the sense of like your training and your nutrition. I mean, like you have to maintain a persona essentially, because athletes are expected to be this squeaky clean persona where they don't socialize. They, all they do is train. All they do is, you know, and they have to be like a perfect front facing PR person who can, you know, perfectly articulate themselves all the time. Like, these are all intense skills. They are intense skills. And I think so many people forget they're just fucking people. They're just people that just got really fucking good at one particular skill. And yeah. why are we expecting them to be these like almost mini celebrities? That's what we're wanting them to be. We're building them up to be these spokespeople and these, you know, icons, but they just want to do their fucking sport most of the time.
Yeah, but Lucy, this is like super relevant to what happened regarding the Australian Olympic rugby team as well. So I can't fully remember the story, but like listeners, I'm sure you've read it. Essentially on their flight back from Tokyo, I think they basically got on it, got hammered, and some of them were like throwing up and stuff. And now I read this morning that they're having to undergo alcohol counseling. Ugh. Because like, why do we hold these people to these unrealistic standards? Like, if you want to, you're so right. If you want to excel in your sport, you want to be really good at something. Does that automatically mean you have to be a role model in every other category of your life? Like, probably not.
I honestly think it's all a facade. I think they had to do that to save face. But deep down, they know that rugby culture is steeped in drinking. It's steeped in that kind of party culture, because that's what it is, right? So yeah. I honestly feel like they did that just to look like they're doing something about it. But and this is the thing. It's all sort of just like keeping up appearances a lot of the time.
Yeah. I think this brings us really nicely to culture and sport generally. And I think athletes are held to this impossible standard. And we've talked about this with influencers as well, for example. I think it's a similar sort of thing. You expect these people who you look up to in one sense, so in this case, sport, to be everything else as well. And I don't think sport is moving fast enough with the times, because we shouldn't look at a flight full of boys getting pissed as a bad thing anymore. They've just competed in the fucking Tokyo Olympics. Like, let them have a few drinks on the plane. I don't get it. I think also the media plays a huge part in sport now, and I think that isn't talked about enough. What Naomi Osaka did when she refused to speak to the press after one of the Opens, it was maybe Wimbledon, I don't know. You can fact check me on that. But she basically just refused to talk to the press for her mental health. And she said, look, I'm competing in this high stress environment. I don't want to talk to you. And they fined her a huge amount of money. And I remember speaking to somebody about this who does sport PR and is very into sport. And he said to me, well, it's in her contract. Like, she signed a contract that said that she has to speak to the press. Otherwise, you know, that's it. And I remember thinking, yes, like, yes. It's not that has to change. It's the way that the media interrogate athletes after matches and games or whatever. That is what has to change. I mean, talking to the press shouldn't be this high stress thing where you think you have to put, imagine, you think you have to pull out for your mental health. There should be rules. There should be limits. There should be like actual guidelines that media have to abide by to get in front of these athletes and speak to them, because it's not fair. They're not treated like humans.
And it's okay to not feel like, if you're struggling, if you're unwell, and I mean that physical or mental, you're okay to not turn up to work. It's well within your rights to have a day off work. And, you know, she needed to do that. And the way that the press twisted it as if she was being a diva, classic trope. She was being a diva, this and that. And, you know, oh, she should have, you know, it's part of her job. She should expect it, blah, blah, blah. I just think, like, at what point are we ever going to analyze the system and analyze the way that we treat people, the way that press interviews and press articles are written about people? When are we going to realize that the system is fucked rather than just blaming anyone who can't handle it? Oh, they shouldn't have signed up for it if they can't handle it, and then just throwing people into this fucking shitstorm. When are we going to analyze the shitstorm? When are we going to be like, hang on a second, this shitstorm, like, it shouldn't be a shitstorm?
This is why people do what she did, and why the story with Shikari and the positive test. So essentially, she tested positive for marijuana and was then banned from competing in the Tokyo Olympics, even though she'd won so many races before that. And she was set to be like a golden girl at the games. And I mean, I remember speaking to my dad about this and I said, that's absolutely ridiculous. Like, weed is not a performance enhancing drugs. Like, you know, people have got away with doping. They've got away with all sorts of shit, but she gets caught smoking a bit of weed and she's banned. And he said to me, well, she knew the rules. She knew the rules. Therefore, if she wanted to compete, that, like, that's what, that's what she had to do. But then, this is the whole point, right? The rules are fucked.
The rules,
the rules shouldn't be like that. But no one ever changes anything by just talking about it or sitting back and just like abiding by them. This is how change is made. So like someone has to be the fucking martyr that stands up to the rules. Otherwise, nothing ever changes. And what's sad is that that's probably not going to change anything still. But I mean, at least it's been brought to our attention.
I have no fucking good point to make on that apart from it's fucking stupid that she got fucking disqualified from Tokyo for smoking a joint. Like, that shit should make her tired as fuck, lethargic.
Like, she probably needs to fucking calm down a bit. Do you know what I mean? Like, she probably needs that joint. If you're an Olympic athlete, like, my God, cut her some slack. But at the same time, I do actually aggressively agree with your dad. Like, it's not actually a case of being like the moral police and being like, is smoking a cheeky joint should it ruin your career? You know, it's actually just about they're the rules. And I'm like, yeah, the rules are outdated, but yeah, they are the rules.
I agree in the sense of where's the line? Okay, if we say weed is allowed, does that mean people can be smoking them before they go on? Like, are people going to be smoking in the stadium before they compete? So I get that there has to be a line, but I would say the rules are the rules, yes, but we're stopping an amazing black athlete from running and sprinting in the Olympics and doing something fucking amazing, and we're stopping her on a technicality that everyone knows full well has not enhanced her performance by any stretch. Yeah. In fact, it's probably decreased her. It's probably, what's the opposite of enhance? It's probably more negatively impacted her performance than anything, which is amazing in itself. So it's totally frustrating that there's no context,
the other thing to note is that weed is legal in her state.
Exactly.
So it's even like it was an illegal thing. But I think, so the other thing to consider is the reason that she smokes weed is to deal with stress and family trauma. Yeah, and so, yeah. I mean, basically the rules, I think the rules shouldn't be one size fits all, because there will never be rules that are one size fits all. I mean, there's some stuff, okay, you know, you cannot do X, Y, and Z performance enhancing stuff, right? Fine. But you don't know what somebody's going through in their private lives. It's too nuanced to just say this is banned, even though it has absolutely nothing to do with your performance on the field. This is banned.
Okay. Perfect situation for a non one size fits all approach to the rules. Where do we all stand on trans athletes competing in gendered events?
I have so much to say about this. So it's complicated because it depends on so many factors. It depends on when the person has transitioned, which I think is one of the main things. The later you transition, the more you have of the sex that you were in before, and the more you carry over to the other. But if we're going to start banning transgender athletes, then the question is, well, what about the women, for example, who have more testosterone than all the other women? Like, do we start having testosterone categories for sporting events? Do we just sack gender completely and test people's testosterone levels and have men and women competing and everyone in between competing in the same races, but they are like a weight class, for example, like, you know, the weightlifting going weight classes and the boxing, whatever. You'd have a testosterone class for athletes. I mean, we could go that far.
The fucking problem with this is, though, we remove one assigned label of humanity and we replace it with 10 more. Doesn't fucking solve the problem. Doesn't solve the problem. I asked this question, I threw it in there because I still don't know what the like answer is supposed to be, like what good looks like in this situation. Like obviously in my head I'm like, everyone should be allowed to compete in what they feel like they belong in and what they want to compete in, but like I'm so out of my depth on this. It's like there's so much fucking science involved. I don't know.
Yeah, the problem is though, it's not just testosterone that's the defining thing that suddenly makes mm-hmm. someone 10 times better than anyone else, and that's the problem. I think we're kind of being fed by the media that, you know, testosterone is this magic hormone which suddenly makes everyone, you know, a super athlete and a winner, etc. And like there's no denying testosterone certainly does help for sure, but it's not the be all and end all. And I feel like what you said, Tara, it's like, okay, if we're treating the testosterone level as like the most defining factor that separates the two categories, and that's what we're doing, then why are we doing men and women? Why are we not just categorizing it between the level of test? Maybe that is the solution. I don't know. But for me, it's just not good enough to say, no, trans people can't, they can't compete. They just can't. Oh, it's just like awful. The way, it's not the world that we're going to be living in. It can't, that can't be. So there needs to be a solution. This is another example of the system needs to change. Something mm-hmm. needs to change in the way we structure and organize things.
Yeah,
it's like
agreed.
Gendered bathrooms. It's been pretty seamless. You know, we now have ungendered bathrooms, and that's something that a lot of places have adapted to now, and that's great. But we're so reluctant to change sport because, you know, it's like a historic thing and it's like a cultural thing and it can't be touched. There's all these rules. Well, it's like, when are we going to actually delve into it and be like, hang on a second, does this model work for 2021 and onwards? Because it doesn't.
I don't think it is. I mean, I don't know. I could be wrong, but I don't think it is that. I think it's genuinely because people equate strength, endurance, and speed with men. And if a man has transitioned to a woman to compete in the female category for an event like the athletics or something like that, then they have an advantage and it's not fair, right? And it's as simple as that. But I think it's just not that simple. Also, then what do you do if, like, there are some disciplines, obviously, where, like, that strength and speed and whatnot isn't the be all and end all of the sport.
Yeah.
Like,
good
you
point.
Know,
yeah.
If someone transitioned and they were in the rhythmic gymnastics, like it doesn't help to have, like, it's too complicated for a one size fits all. And that's why I completely agree with you. I think the whole entire system needs to change. And I want to bring this on to just women in sport generally, because I think this is an interesting thing to mention when we're talking about basically the kind of the sport being judged on how strong, fast, basically strong and fast you are, right? So that's the whole conversation. It's like, well, is it fair if this person is stronger and faster? And I think that there's a cultural thing where we look at men and we say, well, they're stronger, they've got more testosterone, therefore they're stronger and they're faster, therefore they're better at sport. And I just do not think that that's true, period. That shouldn't make somebody better at sport. I think that's a hugely narrow-minded view of the world and of sport. And I see this, it's a cultural thing that I don't think enough people really think about, because if you got them to think about that, they'd be like, oh yeah, you know what, actually I see your point, right? I put something up on Instagram where I said that if a guy loves men playing sports and watches men's football all the time and men's rugby all the time, but then shits all over women's sport, that's a massive red flag to me. And it's a red flag to me because they're caught in that system where they basically just don't value women's skills that are inherently feminine as much as they do skills that are inherently men, or they think that at least. And there's this vicious cycle of they don't see women as strong or as fit as men, and they see those as the most important skills in sport, which I just don't think is true, right? And then that means that they don't watch it enough. That means that there's not enough funding in women's sport. That means that there's not enough opportunities for women to play sport. That means that there's not enough funding, and it just goes round and round. That means that they're not as good as the men. But we're talking about sports like, I mean, and then you equate it to to the first woman that ran the Boston Marathon in 1967, right? That was the first time that a woman was allowed to compete in the marathon. And if you equate it to that, her coach said to her that he didn't think that she could do it because, I'm going to pull up the exact quote because it's absolutely ridiculous. He said that that the marathon was far too difficult for a fragile woman to run. Okay, this happened in 1967. Like, we're not that far away from that. And it's just, I think the world really needs to move forward with this idea that men are stronger, therefore they're better. It's not good enough anymore.
Even like, I don't know how you guys feel. I know Tara, yours is probably quite different, but my relationship with sport is not so great because in school, I hated PE, I hated competitive sports because I felt like it wasn't for me. And I always felt like I just didn't like exercise off the back of it. And it took me until the age of, I don't know, 20, 21 to actually start training and moving my body, going down the gym route, not the sport route, but it took me that long to actually see exercise as something that could be enjoyable because I'd grown up thinking sport was just for boys, and I just wasn't good at it. And I didn't see these inspirational women doing amazing things at the Olympics. It was really only watching the men compete. They were the big games, the big matches. And they, unfortunately, they still are to a degree. They're the ones that get loads of hype. So I think like, and especially with football culture, like my dad growing up, he would always watch football on the TV, men playing and, you know, golfing, men playing. So I just have been so conditioned for so long. And it makes me wonder, you know, my mum says to me, apparently when I was 4 years old, I really wanted to do gymnastics, but they didn't have enough money to support me to go there. So I never did. And it makes me wonder, God, if I actually had done gymnastics at the age of four, I'm almost certain that my relationship with exercise and training and my viewpoint on sport would be so different to what it was for so long. And unfortunately, I find that is the story for a lot of women growing up. I know, Tara, with you, like you were quite lucky, weren't you, to kind of be introduced quite early on, which I think makes such a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, my mum obviously just put me in every single sport that she could find until I found something that I liked. And I was incredibly lucky to have, but also have, you know, they had enough money to send me to all of these sports camps. And that obviously helped an incredible amount. But I think it's a vicious cycle. So everything I just said there about, you know, women, and actually there's a stat here, which is just, I mean, I just can't believe this, right? So Ohio University did a study, and they found that whilst women make up 40% of participants in professional sport, they only account for 4% of media coverage.
Ooh,
which is depressing. It's that, and the argument for women not making as much money as men in sport is because they don't bring in enough revenue. But like, so much has to change for all of that to change. And we're so far away from it. But it also means that women are less pushed into sport because there's less opportunities, there's less money in it. So parents take women out of girls out of sport much earlier than they do boys, because boys have a shot at making it. And sorry, very quickly, let me finish this because this is also just insane. Of the 50 highest paid athletes in the world, two of them are women, and those are Naomi Osaka and Serena Williams.
Fucking
that's it.
Hell. Wow.
But you can just see how the vicious cycle manifests itself in that way. Like, that's shit. That statistic is shit. It doesn't surprise me at all. I'm surprised there's two in there. I'm genuinely surprised there's two in there. But, like, this is the thing, right? So me, growing up, like, just thinking about being at school, every boy in primary school wanted to become a professional footballer. And I wanted to be a hairdresser literally until the age of, like, 11. It's quite late that I decided I didn't want to do that, to be honest. But it's not just the fact that there's a gender divide. It's the fact that I would never have even thought it was an option to even want that career for myself. And frankly, at the time, 20 years ago, it wasn't an option. It wasn't. And now it's only just becoming a little bit of an option, but even then it's subject to the vicious cycle that you describe. But this is where I want to bring in like a little bit of flavor for this discussion, is that the elephant in the room is there are anatomical differences between gendered male and female bodies. So where, how do we tackle that?
Why does that mean that they're better? Why does that, like, that shouldn't equate to them being better at things. It just means that we're different. And there are other countries in the world, I think, you know, the UK is very far behind on this, but there are other countries in the world where they love, for example, I can't think of exactly where it is, but I think there's a Scandinavian country where they absolutely love their women's hockey team. And they love them. And I think it's a cultural thing because, for example, I mean, gymnastics, right? I mean, obviously the men are amazing as well, but it's the women that are more celebrated in gymnastics still-ish by it a little bit. But we, you know, there are some skills that we could look at women and say they're, but, and I don't think we should be pitting genders against each other, but we always just bloody do that for no apparent reason. Like, they compete differently, and that should be that.
We need new sports, don't we? This is why. Let's fucking talk about, is it Chaz Worthington or what's the name?
BMX. Yes, yes.
Is it? I need to get a name right.
Hold on. Chaz Worthington. No, it's Worthington. Yeah,
Worthington. So Chaz Worthington. This is, so I also want to like pepper this with a little bit of motorsport, right? Because this is where I think motorsport gets really interesting, because those anatomical differences between male and female bodies are less pronounced when you are on something with wheels, in particular on something with wheels with an engine. Yet motorsport is where you probably have the biggest problem with having women in the fucking sport. It yes. is absolutely rife with misogyny. And we still haven't had ever a female Formula One driver. In fact, we've not had a female Formula Two driver. Like, there is minimal progress happening, despite there being so much money being poured into initiatives.
Yeah. And I mean, Formula One is like, a woman can compete in the Formula One, right? It's not like they're they're allowed. So it is actually, you could look at it as it's a multi-gendered sport. It's like a, you know, you can all race together.
But then the problem is, right, the argument is that even when you're in a Formula One car, it's still very physically exhausting. You still have to be very, very fit. You still have to be very strong to control the car at those G-force, etc. But like, that's not the fucking excuse. The problem is there is no one coming through the funnel of women in motorsport, right? You're literally picking from like 100 potential candidates as male drivers and then maybe one female driver. It's a game of statistics right now.
I also think with a sport like motor sports, it is really fucking expensive, and I will say yes, mostly rich people can only afford to do it. So like, the stakes are super high. If you've got like a child and you're like, right, I'm going to train them up to be a motorsports racer, then you'd have to invest so much. And if it's just led by men, you're going to be like, oh, you know what? I'm probably just going to put my daughter into something else, dancing or something, you know? Mm-hmm.
The other amazing athlete who won it, was it a bronze? What's her name? Sky Brown? Skating?
Oh,
skateboarding.
Is
it bronze?
Oh, yeah, it's a bronze.
So these, but like her English and Chaz
Worthington,
right? She's 13. Yeah. But these are what I love about, so it's not quite motorsport, but it's like, I don't know what you'd call it, like assisted sport in some way. But what I love about it is it removes that argument of, oh, what about the physical differences between men and women? It's like, no, hang on. We all have a much more level playing field in terms of the equipment. And that's where we're seeing, like, you know, women are doing really well. And those events are still gendered, I think. But that's, you know, we're seeing really great coverage of it. We're seeing really sort of encouraging messages around it. And that's because people can get a lot more behind this new, I think you're right, Tara, it's about changing the definition of winning, and it's about changing the definition of competing, not to just be strong and fast, because we cannot deny there are gender differences, typically speaking, as two different genders, right? But it's about like, yeah, reframing what an exciting sport looks like. And like the martial arts as well. Incredible results in martial arts.
When I listen to all this, is the goal of enjoyable sport watching the fastest person or the person that can lift the most? Or is it just watching amazing people do incredible things with the body they're in? So I feel like the way we're just viewing sport is like, okay, I only want to watch the fastest. And because of that, I only want to watch the men, or I only want to watch the strongest. So it's like, why can we not just enjoy, kind of like what you said, Tara, why can we not enjoy the different sports, the different genders for what they are? Why does it have to be a case of, yeah, but the men are faster, so that means they're better? It's like, well, they're just different. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
I agree. I got one comment that somebody made as well on this post that I did on Instagram was, women don't even watch women's sport. So how do you expect us men to watch it? And it's such a close-minded view of the world. But I do think that we need to bring our kids up watching both men and women play sport. Like, because like you said, Lucy, we're brought up just watching men's football. Like, I didn't even know that women's football matches were a thing until like a few years ago. I didn't even realize they played. And it's just mental. Like, I went to watch a Spurs women's match. Guess how much tickets were? In the big stadium.
How much?
Like fucking tenner or something.
£8.
Oh, fuck.
Compared to what's a typical ticket setting you back for a Spurs game?
I mean, hundreds. Hundreds.
Yeah, there you go.
It's insane. And there will be guys listening to this who will be like, yeah, but the men are just so much better. And I'm sorry, but that's not fucking good enough. You'll still go and watch like shitter teams play. But for some reason, the women, nah, it's not cool. It's not right.
The thing is, though, I have to say, the thought of a load of male football fans suddenly going to watch women's football makes me feel sick, because I know full well what will be going on. Like, they will just be fucking ogling everyone. I sound like an old woman that be ogling everyone, but they will. They'll be harassing the players. So
the coverage of that Reddit channel you found, Tara, the coverage of the women's, like, women in Olympic sports or whatever, and it was just fucking pervs just commenting like, "Oh, when I die, scatter my ashes in the female long jump pit or whatever," because it's a picture of someone like bent over and their bum was out a bit. It's like, Oh my God, I don't even know where to start with this. This is a can of worms.
And 215,000 people in that group. Like, that's this, you know, we haven't even got time to cover the outfits and the problem with all the clothing in the Olympics either, which is just nuts. We need a whole episode to talk about that, I reckon. I reckon this needs a part two. But yeah. It's just... Even I think, okay, the one saving grace of football is that the women aren't wearing bikini bottoms, but men don't take women seriously. Like, none of this, I think, the biggest issue here is the way that we view women in the world, right? And this can all be traced down to it, but in sport, it's blatant. It's just out in the open for everyone to see. And I think in previous years, nobody really cared, but I do think that now more people care. It gets more coverage. It's out in the open now, and people are talking about it, and people are, I think, slowly but surely doing things about it. So at least that leave you on a happy note. Hey, Mom, it's me.
Hey.
So we've done a whole episode about sport, basically, and I think we've done it justice, but you can let us know when you listen to it. And we have a question for you as a closing question. Yeah. And we want to ask you how you think sport has changed in the last 10 years and what you'd like to see change next.
What I want to say, actually, is that we... you know, the women have to do this for ourselves. We have to follow women's sport. We have to be involved in women's sport. We have to play sport. We have to watch it when it's on TV. We have to campaign for it in schools. and we have to click on you know, when we're online and we're reading news and stuff, we have to open articles on written by women about sport, open articles about women in sport. So we need to start doing all this for ourselves, because until the women get behind the women, and you know, we show the world that we're interested in sport and that it's we think that it's important, that you know, sport for women is important, you know, we can't just wait for other people, men, others, to do it for us, because basically we've waited a bloody long time. And you asked me if anything's changed in the last 10 years. Well, you know, nothing's changed. I mean, 2012, Boris Johnson was mayor of London. And when he was asked which sport he watched, he said women's beach volleyball. So, and basically what's happening at the Olympics now, we're 2021, and there's still a discussion about the very skimpy bikini bottoms that the women's beach volleyball team are playing. So nothing's changing. We have to make this change ourselves.
I think Rina basically encapsulated all of our thoughts really succinctly in one voice note. So thank you, Rina, for joining us as our close friend of the week again. We need to get her back on the pod now. But I think that's all we have time for now. So should we wrap here, guys?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. As you guys may or may not know, we've changed our Instagram handle to @closefriends now. So you can find us there on Instagram. And I've been @LucyMountain, Tara @MoveWithTara, and Sarah @Sarah.B.London.
That was wrong.
Is it dots or no?
SarahB.London.
SarahB.London. Yeah, don't get that handle wrong. Go follow Sarah. Get Sarah to 10K. Thank you so much for listening, guys. And we will catch you next week. Bye.
Bye, friends.